Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday School Hour for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining
Leviticus
us this morning.
Leviticus is a very, very hard book to figure out. I mean, those of us, you know, we're doing our casual reading. Leviticus is not one of the places that we normally gravitate to. And yet it's a very important book. And that's why we're doing this series, so that we can kind of understand and apply this book. And it's really all about a holy and a gracious God providing a way for a people. Now, mind you, a rebellious people, a people who just got done saying, after God made miracles in Egypt, you know, and these plagues and pulled them out and opened the Red Sea and brought them out, and these miracle after miracle after miracle. And then these same people who saw God do miracles and signs and wonders said, we're going to melt our earrings and jewelry, make a calf and say, this is who brought us up out of here. And those same people, God saying, I got to make a way so that we can have fellowship. When you think the book of Leviticus is kind of over the top, it's that we're dealing with. It's saying that sin is real and that there are things that separate us from God, and there are great lengths that have to be gone to so that we can have fellowship with God. And so Leviticus is always pointing us towards something greater, even though it lays a foundation to help us know about God's holiness. It's best understood, as we've said the past 2 weeks, as a shadow. That's why we call this series The Law, The Shadow. And so the book of Hebrews, you know how sometimes they want to study the sun and yet you can't look at the sun because it burns us. So they put these filters up and then you can really look at it. Perhaps the best way for us is to look through a filter at the book of Leviticus, and that filter would be the book of Hebrews. So let's look at Hebrews chapter 10 while we begin our journey today. Hebrews 10, 1 through 14. For since the law has but a shadow of the good things to come instead of the true form of these realities, it can never, by the same sacrifices that are continually offered every year, make perfect those who draw near. So right at the bat, it says, look, the law is not the true form. The true form is something else. And the law is a shadow. It's giving us an image. It's showing us, you know, kind of an outline, but it has no depth. It has no understanding. And so in verse 2, it says, otherwise, would they not have ceased to be offered, since the worshipers, having once been cleansed, would no longer have any consciousness of sin? But in these sacrifices, there is a reminder of sin every year, for it is impossible for the blood of bulls and of goats to take away sins. Okay? That's what he's saying here. Look, the law could never make you perfect. It could never perfect you. It could never make you righteous. It could only deal with the consequence. And then verse 5 lets us know, consequently, when Christ came into the world, he said, sacrifices and offerings you have not desired, but a body you have prepared for me. In burnt offerings and sin offerings, you've taken no pleasure. Then I said, behold, I've come to do your will, O God, as it is written of me in the scroll of the book. I know that's kind of a lengthy thing, but it's letting us see what the law was really all about. He goes on to say in verse 8, when he said above, you have neither desired nor taken pleasure in sacrifices and offerings and burnt offerings and sin offerings, these are offered according to the law. Then he added, behold, I have come to do your will. Now look, gang, this is the big part. He abolishes the first in order to establish the second. And by that, will we have been sanctified through the offering of the body of Jesus Christ once for all? And every priest stands daily at his service, offering repeatedly the same sacrifices which can never take away sin. Okay, these same sacrifices could never take away sin. But when Christ had offered for all time a single sacrifice for sins, He sat down at the right hand of God, waiting from that time until his enemies should be made a footstool for his feet. For by a single offering, he has perfected for all time. Gang, he has perfected for all time those who are being sanctified. And so what this is letting us know is that Jesus came to do God's will. And so in Jesus coming, in his death, the way that he lived, his resurrection, that he was totally fulfilling the law. 100% fulfilling the law. And now he's establishing something greater. Grace through faith. And so because Jesus' offering was perfect, Leviticus is letting us know that it's pushing us towards Christ. It's saying that this could never have gotten you where you needed to go, but it's pushing us towards the expectation of something better, which is Jesus. And so as we look on today, we left off last week talking about, again, there are four major topics. It talks about the ceremonial ritual sacrifices. It talks about the priesthood. It talks about clean and unclean, which we're going to discuss today, and then the Day of Atonement. So today, as we left the priesthood, something interesting happened, and that's Leviticus 10, where we're going to start our conversation today. Leviticus 10, 1 through 2, and it's going to set us up to our topic today. Now, the priests have been chosen. The priests have been consecrated. The priests are now starting their priestly duties. They're offering sacrifices, and we pick it up right here in chapter 10. Now, Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it and laid incense on it and offered, what's the next word there, gang? Unauthorized fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed them, and they died before the Lord. Okay, so here's kind of what's set up. That these two guys, Nadab and Abihu, God had given them instructions of which fire that they were to use. And they were supposed to take fire that was used from the brazen altar. Okay, and they were supposed to use this fire to operate. And so this difficult passage for us to navigate, it's we can get the wrong idea of God. We can get an idea of God that he's just this angry old guy who's, again, why did you do this? And he's smiting them down. It's easy to get the wrong idea when we read this. But let me go back to say this. That God, being a perfect, pure God, had offered a way that mankind continually rejects and has done their own way. Newsflash. For all of us in this room, I bet that we could identify with this statement. I would rather do it my way than God's way. Anybody identify with that from time to time? It's in your nature. Any stubborn people in the room here today? All right. For all of us stubborn people, I want you to know it's inherent. It's inside of us. It's that nature. You've heard me say umpteen thousand times, I've never had to teach my children to disobey. That came quite naturally. I came across disobedience and selfishness quite naturally. I never had to teach my kid to be like, I want that. Arr. They just do. Why? Because there's something inside of us. There's something inherent inside of us that God is reaching out through his grace. And we see it here in this thing, this difficult passage for us to understand. So God provided a specific way for good reason for us to come into his presence and to offer sacrifices and offer offerings. And what it's letting us know is that God's holiness has an impact on us. And we just can't do things our own way. God very clearly made a way for us. When Moses had his first encounter with the Almighty God, with the burning bush, we read this thing where Moses saw this burning bush, he was drawn to it, and a voice spoke out and called to Moses, and then says, don't come any closer. In fact, take your shoes off, because the ground you're standing on is, and he uses the word holy ground. And so you'd think, well, if God's a holy God, then why in the world would getting close to him have a bad impact on us? I remember early on with my kiddos, when I'd be traveling for a while and I'd come back in, and I remember this one time it had rained and I pulled in and I was in the driveway and the yard was all muddy and the kids ran out and Eli was going to take right across, and it was, and I could see this big old nasty thing, and then I was like, don't come any closer, you're going to get all dirty. And sure enough, he did it. He wanted to come, and he didn't understand that there was a problem there. And God is talking, and he's letting Moses know that there's something going on inside of Moses, that if he comes any closer, it's going to be detrimental to him. God's holiness has a detrimental effect and impact on unholiness and impurity. Perhaps another way we can see this is 1 Chronicles chapter 13, 1 through 4. Okay, we're going to jump to another time where the Ark of the Covenant had been captured by the Philistines, and they're having all of these issues, and David is coming into power, and he's going to bring the Ark of the Covenant back into Jerusalem. And we pick up this story in 1 Chronicles chapter 13, 1 through 4. It said, David consulted with the commanders of thousands and of hundreds and with every leader, and David said to all the assembly of Israel, if it seems good to you, and from the Lord our God, let us send abroad our brothers who remain in all the lands of Israel, as well as to get the priests and Levites in the cities that have pasture lands, that they may be gathered to us, and let us bring again the ark of our God to us, for we did not seek it in the days of Saul. And all the assembly agreed to do so, for the thing was right, where? In the eyes of... Here's a problem with this, gang. So David sought counsel from the commanders, from every leader, and from the assembly of Israel. And then said at the end, if it seems good to us, and God. Why is and God at the end? Why is and God at the end? If it seems good to us, and of the Lord. And then goes into some specifics about, he has this whole big thing planned out about how he's going to do this good deed. And again, it's a great deed, but he wasn't doing it God's ways. In whose eyes was this strategy approved? There's a very important thing here. He said, who signed off on this strategy? All of the people. My brothers and sisters, I beg you to understand that we live in troubled times in a very, very dangerous age where we have decided that our way is better than God's way. Again, this is not necessarily a bad thing. To bring the ark into Israel is not a bad thing, to bring the ark back into Jerusalem. I think that God's okay with it, but the specifics are very, very troubling. I mean, how many times do we try to throw a religious backdrop on our own desires? Okay? You remember what happened here? He put it on a new cart instead of on the shoulders of the priests. The ark was only supposed to be borne on the shoulders of the priest. And so we have a big problem here. Let's go on to verse 7 through 10. And they carried the ark of God on a new cart from the house of Abinadab and Uzzah and Ahio, who were driving the cart. And David and all Israel were rejoicing before God with all their might, with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and cymbals and trumpets. Man, you can have all the right sayings, but if you're not careful, I know people who have a great polished religious exterior, and at the very center of their being aren't doing things God's way. I can throw a Jesus fish on my business all day long. I can put it on a billboard. Oh, and we're smiling, Dave. But if I'm corrupt at the very bottom, honey, there's a problem. There's a big problem. And it has infected our society to the utmost. And here's what happens. And when they came to the threshing floor of Chidon, Uzzah put out his hand to take a hold of the ark, for the oxen stumbled, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and he struck him down because he put out his hand on the ark, and he died there before God. That doesn't sound right. So the oxen are walking, and here's what I believe. I believe the oxen were like, "This ain't, we aren't supposed to carry this. This is, you doing something, Wilbur, you're doing something wrong." And his knees were shaking. And you know who the knuckleheads and all this? David. David should have known. It's one thing to try to put a religious stamp on something that seems good and not worry about the specifics. And gang, we have to really understand the specifics. So the ox stumbled. He put out his hand to steady the cart and he died on the spot. He was doing something that seemed good, but it was unauthorized. And so it starts with David talking to the people instead of God. And then he mixes in God a bit to it, as we do. And then he assumes that all is well. But the specifics get lost. And God has a specific way, my brothers and sisters, and this is talking about the foundation of your salvation. God has a specific way that you are to come to Him. And you see, you read the polls, you read the studies, you read the surveys. The majority of people in our nation still believe that there's a whole bunch of ways to come to Jesus. Be a 99% a good person or a 51% good person. Some people believe go to church. Some people say, oh, we'll just do lots of good deeds. If you do enough good deeds, all of those seem good. People say it. Hollywood makes films about it. Raking in millions of dollars, putting out very, very, very corrupt theology to just let you know that you feel good. Or that we're going to be born multiple, 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 multiple times. And we drink it and we assume because it's popular, it's true. And we wonder why the book of Leviticus isn't taken seriously. It's hard to understand because it says something that we don't like, that there are absolutes. And we live in a world created by God. And we can frame the debate many, many, many ways. But when we sit there and we can say that we take by faith that there was nothing, and then there was a big bang and there was something that we break all the laws of science in which we hold that there was no matter and now there's all the matter of the universe. And how in the heck did that happen? It just happened. We take that by faith, but we reject the fact that we can see the handiwork and the signature of God in all of life and around us and sentient life. It doesn't just randomly happen. We have God's signature on us. And so the very God that formed us and created us, it desires to have fellowship. God loves life. So my first point for us today, gang, is this. God's holiness dictates how we come to Him. Pastor, we don't like the word dictates. We don't like the word dictates. No, I chose that word specifically. We don't tell the potter how he forms the clay. And man, boy, do you realize how countercultural that is today? Because we live in the day and the age where we allow our kids to just tell us how dare anybody put any rule or anything? How dare anybody put a hand upon us to help form us? Or how dare someone say that what I say or feel or think, that that's not absolute truth? Gang, there is absolute truth. Relative truth was a creation of Satan from the very beginning. And my personal belief, and I'll be happy to debate all day long because I've spent hours thinking about this. I mean hours and hours and days. And I really believe that relative truth is the foundation of just about every single evil that we can trace. Why is this? God's holiness is specific. So God is very specific about how we come into His presence. And this isn't because He's an overbearing fiend. It's because we're corrupt people and He loves us so much. If that's how God was, after they do the golden calf, that's it. I mean, that is it. And umpteen times prior to that, grumbling about Him after He did things. You know, let's think about it like this. Perhaps one of the best ways to think about God is because the word holy means unique and set apart. And if we think about God's holiness and uniqueness as a giver and as the source of all life, the creator of the entire universe and all life, then He has every right to make things His way. So if we think about the sun, and many people can relate to God kind of as the sun. We look at the sun being the powerful. I mean, the sun is so powerful. It's so big. It's almost unfathomable for us to grasp the size of the sun. It's the source of life. It continue gives us warmth. It's unique and it's essential to our solar system, kind of like God. So in those types of way, you know, it's kind of like God in a way, but the closer that you get to it, I remember, you know, I can spend a certain amount of time outdoors here. And then when I go to Colorado and go to and then you stay out and you're like, man, I got a sunburn in 2 hours. How in the world did that happen? You're closer. And the closer, you know, if you were to get a spacecraft and you were to fly closer and closer and closer to the sun, you're going to have a problem. Because you fly into it and it's going to burn you up. That's kind of how some things are with the presence of God. So God is very specific about how we come to Him. And this is because of His holiness and His love for us. And so He wants to make us clean and pure. So we go on to Leviticus 11 through 15, and God begins to decide to define things that are clean and unclean. And let me kind of wrap it up, because there's an awful lot here, and there's where the reading gets very difficult. Basically, you become contaminated when you come into contact with death. All of the things that are labeled unclean, you can kind of trace down to they have something, you know, mold, all these other things. They have death. So touching dead things, certain types of skin diseases which could spread and infect other people, touching mold, certain body fluids, specifically reproductive bodily fluids. All of these things made you unclean or impure to enter in the presence of God. And it's not that these things are necessarily sinful. It just had to be dealt with before you could come into worship. So it wasn't saying that you're evil or you're bad. It's saying that God doesn't want us to just waltz into His presence in an unclean manner, which might affect other people. Following these laws also helped keep a community healthy and clean, healthy and sanitary. And then it goes into the whole clean and unclean foods, and that gets very, very difficult. And what some people speculate that this was a means for those people at this specific area to have the healthiest diet. I personally don't know. I've read a lot of research back and forth on that, and I can't make I don't know that that's the definitive answer. But this one thing I do think is true. It points to the truth that God's people are supposed to be different than the world around them in the things they eat. Or maybe let's expand that. God's people should be consuming. Everybody say consuming. We should be consuming differently than the world. We really should be. And so my second point for us, my first point was God's holiness dictates how we come to Him. My second point is that God's holiness impacts every area of your life. Every area. Okay, three quick more scriptures. We're going on to the next point here. Leviticus 18, 1 through 14. This is where it gets kind of different. And the Lord spoke to Moses saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, I am the Lord your God. You shall not do as they do in the land of Egypt. So God's saying, I want you to be different where you lived, and you shall not do as they do in the land of Canaan to which I'm bringing you. You shall not walk in their statutes. You shall follow my rules and keep my statutes and walk in them. I am the Lord your God. So God's saying, guys, quit trying to be like every other nation. Quit trying to be like the people who we called. Be who I called you to be. I try to communicate that at our youth groups, because we live in a day and an age of a society that just shoves you to conformity. You know, we have these things. Oh, unless you do this, you're not the in crowd, or you're not part of the good crowd. And so I think that God's people must understand, no, you're to be my unique people. Dropping down to verse 19:10. We're almost done, gang. We're almost done. And you shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard, and you shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. Okay, so what he's saying here, he's talking to these individuals who have crops and have vines, and after they've harvested, some of the grapes fall to the ground. He's saying, look, don't be so greedy. Leave those for the poor. Leave those for the people who are traveling in and out. Let me add one more to this, and then I'll tie them together. Dropping down to verse 13 through 16. You shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. That seems like good advice, doesn't it? I mean, if you walked outside and your car got, taken, you'd be upset. The wages of a hired servant shall not remain with you all night till the morning. In other words, look, don't be stingy. Don't try to hold back the people who are working for you. It says, you shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God. I am the Lord. You shall do no injustice in court. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. You shall not go around as a slanderer among your people, and you shall not stand up against the life, of your neighbor. I am the Lord. Okay. Here's what he's basically saying here. And we can wrap all of the second part of the rules for purity that we've seen. The second edition says it has an impact on us. You're supposed to treat people differently than the culture around them. And so as Christians, there should be something different about us. Again, this is the type and this is a shadow. So what's the real thing? Christians should interact differently with the world around them. We as followers of Jesus Christ, we should be setting the bar about how good and how we're compassionate, and that the church should be people who are taking up, taking care of the people with disabilities and people who are unfortunate. We should have a difference. We have called to give care for the poor. We're called to give social justice for all. And I know that's a very loaded word right now. I'm not talking about in a political sense. I'm talking about looking out for people who are treated unjustly. You know, that's the old thing. Boy, I've seen this in churches. I've seen it over and over where people think that, oh, if the wealthiest families in the church, they're the ones who make all the decisions and run, and then everyone else gets treated like garbage. What God is saying is, that don't fly in my house. Okay? Then he goes on in chapter 19 through 29, about sexual integrity. Boy, hot topic in our culture today. And we have this entire long list of things where God is basically laying out that we are supposed to be exceptionally pure in our sexual integrity. And so my final point for us to this, my first point was that God's holiness dictates how we come to Him. And that the second point was that God's holiness impacts every single area of our life. And my third and final point as we wrap this up is to know that God's holiness is expressed through our morally pure behavior. And what a difference from a legalistic theology that says if you act good, that means that will make you good. No, what this is letting us know is that's the shadow. The actual type is when God transforms your heart, you're going to want to be loving to everyone. You're going to walk. You're not going to look for the line. You're going to look to glorify God. You're going to be led by the Spirit. There are things that Jesus did that drove the religious people crazy. There are things that Jesus did that seemed to skirt the law. He lets people eat with unclean hands. He heals people on the Sabbath. What is he doing? He's challenging our standard of righteousness. He was telling them a higher standard. And that's what we are called to do. So my brothers and sisters, look, I get it. Leviticus is difficult. But I hope that you'll journey a little bit deeper. And I pray that this week, as you spend some time reading through the book of Leviticus, I pray that you would have your eyes open and consider this. Is your life reflecting an absolute truth or a subjective truth? Have you embraced God's absolute truth in your life? And if you have, here's how you're going to know. Your standard, your love for your compassion for the poor. It's not just about saying, I'm saved and I've got me, my four, no more. Your heart is going to be towards the broken, the hurting, the wounded, the unjust, to give compassion and to share Christ's love with them. Amen.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday school offered for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.